well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. As I mentioned yesterday, we're going to be talking with Mark Oliver from the National Shooting Sports Foundation here in a moment or two. A couple of topics. One, the incredible amount of butthurt coming from the gun control lobby about the fact that more women are becoming gun owners and exercising their Second Amendment rights. They absolutely can't stand that. We're also going to talk about a new report released by California Attorney General Rob Bonta on the number of crime guns in California and the source for crime guns in California. I hate that term. I know that the ATF has used it and, you know, a lot of folks have run with it, but we're basically talking about firearms that were traced, right? And not every firearm that's traced is used in a crime. Not every gun that's used in a crime is traced by the ATF. But I think that this report, you know, generally used to advance an anti-gun agenda, but more specifically, I think this report is aimed at bolstering a bill we talked about earlier this week, actually, with Rick Travis from the California Rifle and Pistol Association. I think it's AB 1127 that would ban the sale of Glock handguns in the state of California. And I think Bonta is doing what he can to try to up the odds of that bill passing. So let's talk about it again with Mark Oliver from the National Shooting Sports Foundation. Take a look. Mark, it's good to see you, my friend. Thanks so much for coming on the program today.
Cam, it's always a treat to talk to you, and I appreciate you having us on.
Absolutely. I'm glad that Larry, you know, let you out for the day. I love talking to Larry, but at least this time I don't have to hear about the Yankees. So that's one little bit of relief. You know, I reached out to you because I saw this great column at the NSSF's website about it was talking about, you know, the rise in women gun owners, right? Which is nothing new, but what is, and I don't necessarily know that this is new either, but the gun control lobby can't stand this, right? And they are actively attacking the firearms industry for acknowledging that more women are buying guns, that more women are interested in getting trained, they're interested in hunting, they're interested in competitive shooting. They obviously have a huge problem with this, but they, again, also take issue with the fact that the firearms industry is cognizant of these trends.
It's I think the difficulty for those on the other side of this argument about, you know, lawful gun ownership have a real concern with the fact that they can't paint firearm owners into a neat little box any longer. The bottom line is, Cam, is that today's gun owner doesn't look like you and I anymore. You know, we're not the old pale and stale stereotype that everyone wants to say that we are. Today's gun owner is increasingly younger, it's increasingly more urban, and increasingly representative of all the different diverse groups that we have in America, all the demographics, including women. The fastest growing segment of any demographic out there right now is African-American women, had an 88% growth of African-American women buying guns. So you have this awareness of more and more women wanting to be able to protect themselves, wanting to be able to protect their families, wanting to be able to exercise their rights and join the shooting sports. And the fact is that gun control groups realize that their grip on these groups is starting to slip as more and more people become aware of what their rights are and how to exercise those rights. So they're lashing out. And it's interesting to watch them do this because all they're doing is exposing their own misogyny and their own sexism over the fact that women can actually choose for themselves to be able to exercise their rights. And that the firearm industry is acknowledging that fact, that they're able to make these decisions for themselves. And they're actually making guns, they're making firearms, they're making all the accessories that women choose to have in their homes and in their hands.
Yeah, there is there's definitely a whoa, little lady aspect to what they're talking about. And I mean, from a gun control perspective, I get it, because as you say, they're losing their grip on, you know, a core group of gun control supporters. Right. I mean, if you look at the breakdown, we can talk about the stereotypical gun owner and how, you know, the face of gun ownership really doesn't look like that anymore. Right. It's not just middle aged white guys. Well, the core constituency for gun control advocates for a long time have been women, right? Far more supportive of gun control than men. So when you see more women embracing their right to keep and bear arms, that strikes directly at the effectiveness of the gun control lobby. That reduces the number of their supporters, and it reduces the amount of outreach that they can do to that group of, you know, ostensibly what should be their most likely supporters, because more and more of that audience is tuning them out.
I mean, Cam, if you look, one of their stalwart organizations that's been funded by Michael Bloomberg with endless amounts of dollars that we could only dream of is Moms Demand Action, right? They set up this whole group that says it's women that are saying we want gun control. Well, what they're seeing now is that women are saying, wait a second, you don't speak for me. I want to be able to exercise my rights when I want to. I want to be able to purchase the firearm that I want to. I want to be able to protect myself, protect my family. And I think that they're starting to see around them that it's not just people buying guns and becoming gun owners. But if you start to peel the layer, like Paige laid out in that blog for us, you start to peel the onion, you're starting to see that more and more women are starting to come to growth in the firearm industry as well. I just left Smith & Wesson factory in Maryville, Tennessee earlier this week. Dina McPherson's the CFO of that company. So you have women in executive leadership in many of these companies now where maybe you didn't see that 10 years ago. And that's representative not just of how far that we are starting to go as an industry. We still have a lot of growth to do. There's still a lot of opportunity for more representation of women in leadership positions. But we're seeing it happen, not just with gun ownership, but in leadership in the companies as well. So it's not this stereotype that they want to tell everybody that this it's people like you and me who look like you and me who are trying to tell everybody else. Today's gun owners making their own decisions. They are representative of the rest of America because, Cam, they are the rest of America, and they just don't get it.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, well, I got you here. I'm going to throw you a curveball because I know I didn't ask if we could talk about this, but I saw something that Larry had posted on X the other day. I think this was from The Smoking Gun, which is another Everytown project. And they were looking at Rob Bonta's report on, quote unquote, crime guns. You and I both know that not every gun that's traced by the ATF is used in a crime. Not every gun that's used in a crime is traced by the ATF. But Rob Bonta puts out this report every year. And, the most common crime gun in California was Glock, which is probably also the most commonly owned handgun in the United States. We talk about the misrepresentation of the gun control lobby, demonizing, commonly owned firearms, demonizing big retailers, right? Turner Outdoors, I think, was the number one source of crime guns in California. Also probably the largest firearm retailer in the state of California. Yeah. And when you actually look at these numbers, what we're talking about here is like way less than 1% of, legally purchased firearms ended up getting traced by the ATF. We're talking about a small fraction of legally possessed firearms that end up getting traced. And I actually looked at the ATF trace data for California. I think 2023 was the latest available. The number one reason to trace a firearm by far in California in 2023 was possession of a firearm, which may or may not involve a crime, right? I mean, somebody could be stopped. Do you have a firearm? Yep, we got a firearm. Do you have a permit for it? Yep, got a permit for it. Well, I'm still going to trace it anyway just to make sure that you legally own it, right? I mean, those traces happen all the time. That's not a crime gun, but that's the most common reason why firearms are being traced.
So it's interesting. If Attorney General Bonta is trying to paint Glock as the source of crime guns, as he likes to say, then is he saying also that former Vice President Kamala Harris is a criminal because she owns a Glock? She told us so on national television, right? She sat down and said that she owns a Glock. No one ever was able to figure out what kind of Glock she owns, but she says she owns a Glock. So then is he painting her as a criminal or potential criminal? That's a very interesting thing to think about. But on top of that, even ATF has come back and said that just because a gun is traced doesn't mean that there's any source of crime at that point of sale where it first happened, whether that be at the retailer or even going back further to Glock as the manufacturer. The fact is that Glocks are one of the most popular handguns in America today. And they're popular because they're reliable. They're popular because they're accurate. They're popular because they're fun to shoot. But that also doesn't mean that just because criminals choose to use that you and I are criminals because we choose to buy that as well. So it's a little bit of a misnomer for them. That's also the same thing as saying that, well, if criminals drive Fords, then all Ford dealerships are participating in crime. And that's just not true.
Right.
So even the ATF has said that just because a gun is traced doesn't mean that there's a crime that's happened at the gun sale. And again, if they start to do some of the math on these things, they start to do some of the research, they see that the source of these tends to be the black market. These guns mm-hmm. have been stolen. These guns have been trading hands. These guns have been used and handed off from one gang member to another. So we're doing everything on our part to make sure that these criminals can't get a hold of these guns. But on the other side, we need the help from people like Attorney General Bonta to work with us and not against us to be able to make sure that we're keeping these guns out of the hands of those who should never have them. The bottom line is we always know this. I mean, Attorney General Bonta, Governor Newsom, the rest of California, nearly every other legislator in California will never stop at anything that they look at as a gun control effort and say that this, maybe we should think twice about this. This is just pure propaganda. Even the ATF has stopped putting out these gun trace data, source data, because they understand that this stuff is being abused and that they've said it in their own reports in the past. We're seeing a sea change happen at the ATF now. Mm-hmm. We're very encouraged by what we see coming down from the Trump administration through the Department of Justice and the leadership at ATF. I was very fortunate last week to be able to participate in one of our Don't Life the Other Guy events with the acting director of the ATF. He is absolutely on our side on this. And we're very encouraged that they want to work with us to be able to do this. We're very proud of that 25-year partnership. But when you start to see antics like this from sitting attorneys general to be able to go out there and abuse the data that they have and present it in a very slanted way, it's not helpful to anybody. GLOG isn't doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
If we look back, maybe we should have some further pointed questions as to why did Attorney General Bonta leak the concealed carry information of concealed carry permit holders in the state?
Yeah, absolutely.
We never really got a straight answer on that. So it's we all know it's biased. It's unfortunate that it happens like this. And of course, there's nothing wrong that Glock has done here. They just happen to be one of the most popular handguns. And that's the reason that maybe criminals are getting hold of those, because they're being stolen from lawful gun owners like you and I.
Absolutely. And again, it's I don't think it's any secret that the state of California is trying to ban the sale of Glock handguns, right? That the bill is AB 1127. It's passed out of the assembly. It's, I believe, in Senate Appropriations.
Interesting that this report comes out about Glock at the same time there's legislation to do this, right?
Right. Yeah. And where is the supposedly not anti-gun Gavin Newsom in all of this, right? He says he's not anti-gun. He says he's not ideologically opposed to the Second Amendment. Of course, he's also complained about gun culture, complained about gun shows, complained about gun ownership. I kind of wish Rob Bonta would sit down for a 4-hour interview with a podcaster. I imagine there'd be some interesting sound bites that would come from that as well.
I think you and I would be very happy to help do some research for the Sean Ryan show, should he ever choose to do so.
Absolutely. In fact, I kind of wish Sean Ryan would have reached out to you or I before they had the sit down with Gavin Newsom. But that's a topic for another time. I'm not going to keep you for 4 hours today, Mark. I do appreciate you joining us on the program. And give my best to Larry. We won't talk about the ALE standings, but I'm sure that we'll be talking to Larry again soon. But again, my friend, it's always good to see you. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks so much, Cam. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
My thanks to Mark for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again here very soon. And yes, I'm looking forward to having Larry back. I don't want to talk baseball. All right. In fact, we're not going to talk baseball right now. We're going to talk about today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, which comes from New York City. The headline from WCYB, DHS says illegal immigrant suspect has long criminal history in New York City attempted robbery. You may have heard about the robbery in question. An off-duty Customs and Border Protection officer was the victim. He shot back at his attacker, who police say is a undocumented immigrant from the Dominican Republic. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem talked about this on Monday, saying there's absolutely zero reason that someone who is scum of the earth like this should be running loose on the streets of New York City, slamming the policies that allowed Miguel Francisco Mora Nunez to both enter the United States illegally in 2023 and then remain here. Apparently only questioned over Zoom, Charles Marino, former senior law enforcement advisor to Janet Napolitano back when she was the DHS secretary, told the New York Post the whole system was overwhelmed by what the Biden administration was doing. But Noem says it wasn't just what was going on in Washington, D.C. There's also New York City's soft on crime policy. She says that he has been released time and time again, even after he later went on to commit multiple crimes. She said the state of Massachusetts has a warrant out for him for armed robbery with a firearm. He also has many other charges against him, such as kidnapping and witness intimidation. And that, to me, is absolutely bizarre. I guess the soft on crime policies would explain it. But if you've got somebody in this country here illegally, they're accused of a violent offense, why would you let them bond out? I mean, first of all, I would think that they would pose a flight risk. If not leaving the country, at least not showing up for their court hearing because they're in this country illegally. And the fact that this was allowed to happen multiple times, again, as Noam said, armed robbery with a firearm, kidnapping, witness intimidation. That's not jaywalking, right? That's not even like shoplifting the candy bar. Those are serious violent offenses. Multiple opportunities to keep this individual behind bars, not just because he posed a flight risk, but because he posed a threat to the community when he was out. And apparently that just never happened. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from East Liverpool, Ohio. Man saves woman during dog attack. I got to say, you know, I'm not one of those individuals who is inherently anti-pit bull, believes that the breed should be eradicated. I don't believe that. In fact, I hate seeing these stories where a pit bull is involved in an attack. But unfortunately, that is the case here in East Liverpool, Ohio. A woman named Lacey Vance was attacked by her own dog, apparently, last Friday. And it was her neighbor and landlord, Sean Gerritsen, who actually came to her defense. He told WFMJ that his two German shepherds were the ones that alerted him, saying acting in a different way that they'd never alerted me before, grabbing my arm and whatnot. So when he saw what was going on, he intervened immediately. At first, he tried to kick the dog that was attacking Vance, but he said it just turned back to her and just continued mauling her. He said there were so many wounds that it was actively working its way up to her neck and face. He said there was no doubt in my mind that the dog was going to kill her. So Gerritsen told people who were in the area, who were, I guess, standing around watching this happen, get back. And then he drew his gun and he shot and killed the canine to protect Vance's life. Gerritsen is a retired police officer. He also administered first aid to Vance until emergency responders arrived on scene. He encouraged everybody to learn how to do basic first aid. In his interview with WFMJ, he said, "I've always been a big advocate of anybody, don't care who you are, to have some basic first aid, basic CPR." He said, "If you can take it even further, don't let it scare you." And he said, "I never would have expected after so many years in the emergency services to come across something like this, but you just don't know." And to literally add insult to injury here, Vance, according to Gerritsen, was let go from her job earlier this week. I guess because she's going to be in the hospital for a while. And so now, not only is she trying to recover, she's still in the ICU, obviously going to face an extraordinary amount of medical bills, but she's lost her livelihood. Thankfully, she didn't lose her life, but she is no longer employed. So her loved ones and friends have started a Facebook group with some fundraising information and updates on her condition. It's called Love for Lacey. You can find that again on Facebook. And hopefully there will be enough funds raised to sustain her while she is getting back on her feet. But in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Sean Gerritsen there in East Liverpool, Ohio. We thank you for stepping in. Now, that was our armed citizen story, not our good deed of the day. We also have individuals in Louisiana who are in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A lineman and a neighbor who saved a couple from a house fire after lightning struck. This is that. I don't know about you. Maybe it's just me because we've had almost daily thunderstorms here and like torrential rains, 1 to 2 inches of rain every day. A lot of lightning. The last storm that blew in a couple of days ago, I was out on my porch watching the rain, and there were two lightning strikes that it was, you saw the light, you heard the thunder like right away, right? Simultaneously. It's pretty darn close. So I'm not, I'm not paranoid. I don't huddle in my bathroom every time that raindrops start falling. But, growing up in Tornado Alley in Oklahoma, seeing the power of these thunderstorms, having been a storm chaser when I was younger, I would be lying if I said I didn't sometimes think about my house being struck by lightning. And it, you know, it, I can imagine it's a terrifying experience if that happens. And that's exactly what happened to a couple in a Church Point, Louisiana. Lightning struck the chimney of the home of Ron and Mary Oakley. And I guess that they were there. So they knew that it had happened, right? I mean, it's kind of hard to not realize that. They checked their attic a couple of times just to make sure there wasn't any damage, but they didn't realize that their home was on fire. So shortly thereafter, a guy named Matt Reed, who is a lineman for, I believe it's SLEMCO, I believe that's Southern Louisiana Electric, blah, 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 cooperative, and Stephanie Stevens, they're both heading down the road near the Oakley's home, and they noticed from the outside the fire and smoke spreading across the roof. So Stephanie Stevens stopped to warn the Oakleys, and with her help, the couple and their dog were able to safely exit the home. Matt Reed, again, getting involved there as well. The couple are okay. Reed was able to use his background as a lineman and his work as a volunteer with the Branch Volunteer Fire Department. He actually pulled the electric meter. He cut power. He used a nearby ladder, grabbed a hose, and got up on top of the roof. Like, before the fire crews even arrived, he was just a couple of feet from where the flames were. He was directing water at the fire, or at least slow it down until a truck could arrive there. While he was on top of the roof, he also noticed that the surface beneath him was heating up, which he realized meant the fire could have possibly spread to the attic. And at that point, you know, he needed to get off the roof. With the help of the Church Point Fire Department, the Branch Volunteer Fire Department, the blaze was eventually extinguished. And according to local media, this was a KLFY in Louisiana. The home was saved. Damage was actually pretty minimal because of Reed's actions. And then, of course, no loss of life, thanks to Stephanie Stevens' quick thinking intervention. So, again, in the right place at the right time, we'll be able to do the right thing. A couple of good Samaritans there in southern Louisiana. Matt Reed, Stephanie Stevens, we thank you for your very, very good deed. Okay, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here on Monday of next week. But don't forget to check out BearingArms.com between now and then. We are keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there is some good news to report, right? We've got some really good language in one of the House Appropriations bills. We've got some bad language that Senator Chris Murphy is trying to insert in an appropriations bill that is passed out of the House and is over on the Senate that would jack up the NFA taxes to almost $5,000. Yeah, so we've got that covered for you and a lot more as well. So again, be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout today, tomorrow, over the weekend. And if you like what you see, would also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. All you have to do, go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT, all capital letters, F-I-G-H-T. You get 60% off your VIP membership. You'll get great savings. You also get great perks at every tier of support, whatever one you choose. But you will be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms, and we greatly appreciate that. So thank you in advance. Have a wonderful weekend. Until we talk again, be well, be safe, and be free.